it's really about who can sort of minimize the mistakes and make the least amount of mistakes and just sail a really smart series.
For the best Olympics coverage, subscribe to the OTB Highlights podcast feed on the OTB Sports app now.
Now then, you're very welcome back. Happy to say Dan McDonnell of the Irish Independent is with us. Hello, Dan.
Hi, Joe. How are things?
I'm very well. We've lots to talk about. Jack Grealish heading for 100 million to Man City, it seems, as Harry Kane looks on and says, can you not see what I've done to make this move happen? What's going on, Man City? But we should start with Bohemians, because last night was a very good night for Irish football. 2-1 winners against a very good side, the 2019 Greek champions PAOK, at the Aviva Stadium, and I suspect you were there and thrilled to see what was going on. So tell us about this game. It wasn't on TV, obviously, so we couldn't really enjoy the full 90 minutes en masse.
No, it's like the it's the underground series of League of Ireland in Europe 2021. Like, you know, in years to come, thousands will claim they were there and witnessed it, but actually, if you didn't see it, then it didn't happen, you know. Listen, I mean, the Bowes games at the Aviva in general have been very good. I wasn't at the first one. I was at another game that night, but I've been at the last two. And, I mean, beating Dudelange from Luxembourg was decent. And you know, they've been in group stages and stuff. But I have to admit, going there last night, as much as a couple of the other Greek teams had had bad results in there, because they're in pre-season, and that as an advantage you definitely have to try and exploit, I just thought with the size of PAOK, the profile of their squad, the number of internationals they had, the vibe around the club, the fact they routinely qualify for group stages, and still might, of course. But I just wondered, would it be a bridge too far for Bowes, to be honest? And almost felt a bit silly sort of for underestimating them, really, because they are a very well drilled side, but also a side, I think, that it's been shown that they're very suited to that stage, you know. And rather than being overawed going to a bigger stadium and a more sort of glamorous backdrop to what they're used to week, it's actually bringing something else out of them. And I think that's the best thing about it, that this is a very young team, you know, this Bowes side. I mean, this is a young team, predominantly of Irish players, but also some very good Scottish players, including Ali Cooge, who scored twice. But you are looking at Irish players who are operating at a really good level in Europe against really top international players, like, you know, Shinji Kagawa. You know, there was a couple of players involved last night who were at the Euros with Austria and Poland. And you could reel off a list of players, you know, a Euro 2016 winner with Portugal, etc., etc. But you're looking at lads like, you know, Ross Tierney and Dawson Devoy and Andy Lyons, who are, you know, a couple of years back, they were playing for Bowes against PAOK in the UEFA Youth League. And a couple of years later, they're playing, a proper first team game against them and winning, and actually probably leaving with a small bit of regret that, as much as, listen, there were chances, there were times in the game where Bowes got away with stuff. I mean, PAOK missed some good opportunities, so you can't be completely revisionist in your match report. Like, they have to ride their luck at times, but Irish sides always have to ride their luck, you know, to execute wins against good nations, good teams. And actually, Bowes will have some regret that maybe they didn't bring a 2-goal lead if they'd managed aspects of the game better. And I'm sure they'd say that even from their perspective, possibly they could have succeeded in doing that. And that would have given them a real chance of going through. Now, as it is, it's a chance, but it's going to be tough over there.
You made the point several times that this league is becoming a more technical league. The League of Ireland is becoming a more technical league. And that's evident even just with a cursory viewing. And so hopefully what we're seeing here is a league which will find itself more able to compete on European terms, as opposed to just Dundalk run brilliantly, doing brilliant things, and it was a flash in the pan moment, but wasn't very sustainable, I suppose, in some ways. Whereas now it does seem like, you talk about Bohemians here, and you could very easily be talking about Shamrock Rovers in some way as well, that these European occasions suit them and suit their technical approach. So we've had a number of false dawns with the League of Ireland, and could this be when they start doing things in Europe? It does feel like we're getting pretty close to hopefully a period now going forward where Irish teams winning in Europe and starting to compete in Europe could become a possibility. I also appreciate Bohemians last night beat a team with a salary 30, 40 times maybe what Bowes are paying out in salary. And ultimately, like, you read Soccernomics or any of these books, the most decisive factor in how any team does in any league is the the salaries paid out, the wage bill, excuse me, is the phrase I'm looking for. So they are still up against it. I mean, 30, 40 times their wage bill is significant. And I presume they still go to Greece very much up against it.
No, listen, very much so. I mean, it's like, I was sort of making the point to people. I don't know if we fully grasp sometimes in this country, like how big some of these clubs are in their own world. Like PAOK are a massive club in Greece. It's like these clubs from Serbia and Eastern Europe. I always had Greek radio on to me before the before Bo's Doodle-On second leg, because they wanted to do a preview of who are this Bo's team that PAOK might be facing. You know, it's headline front page news sort of over there. PAOK games, you know, PAOK matches. It's really like, you know, it's an obsession. And here it's obviously hard to compete for a number of levels. And the point you make about the technical stuff, there's something in that debate, because you would talk to, I'd say if you spoke to Stewie and say League of Ireland players who played in his era, the sort of 2000s, where I think the league was probably stronger then. I still do believe that it was. And listen, there was European results that bear that out. Like they beat teams from Russia and Sweden and, you know, really top league. And actually our ranking in Europe at the time was quite high. But I do think the league is more technical now, as you say, and it's less of a transition of styles going to Europe, that teams are going into European games and generally playing the way that they would in their games at home. Whereas I think, even I remember covering games in the 2000s, there would have been a small bit more of, you compromise what you play, you get bodies behind the ball, and they had the ability to get very good results. But I think now it's a bit more of an easy transition for our clubs to go to Europe. And watching Dundalk play in Estonia last week with the players they have, McElhenney, Will Patching, very technical, Shamrock Rovers, who are the team that have by far the best chance to qualify to the group stages, and it's very likely they will become the story within the next month, more so than the others, just because of the route that they have. They're a very tactical side. Again, the only way they know really how to play is to try and keep the ball. And I think, yes, the way that the league is operating at home, it's quite a young league, maybe not as intense and as brutal as it would have been in that sort of aggressive sense of the word. But I do wonder, because this is the best set of results we've had since 2016, and it's not over yet. And it's not just a case of this new competition, because some of the teams they're playing, they would have faced them in the Europa League as well. And there's definitely been a noticeable upturn in their performances, for sure.
Where can I find you talking to Greek off the ball?
I'm not sure if it was Greek off the ball. It was actually an interesting experience, because they had me on and they came out of ads, and the Greek Joe Malloy, obviously a very suave and sophisticated character who is covering multiple sports and so on, and a dovetail between them, started talking in Greek out of ads, and it was a sort of a mild panic. But the way they just did it was like a press conference, you know, with the translation where switched to English, asked me two or three questions in English, and said, right, I now have to translate this. And then went on a sort of a 3 to 4 minute Greek version where you hear your own words being sort of your own player names being dropped back in there. And then the next day they came back to me and said, can you get us another journalist? Which I presume was to do with a demand as opposed to like the low standard of my own contributions, of course. But this is the point. Like, this is a football mad club. And like, if they get knocked out by Bo's, I mean, their radio phone ins, they'll be having their live line San Marino sort of get Bobby Robson on the phone style moment. I mean, the manager will knock it out of there.
And how do we know that you were faithfully translated? How do we know it wasn't like McDonald saying, we're going to teach your boys a lesson or two?
Well, I didn't get the subsequent interaction that might have come with that.
Okay.
You know, I mean, that didn't happen. But I think so. Someone from Bo's was pointing out that when they played Dude Lounge in the previous round, like Bo's put up a sort of a light enough Instagram post saying we're through to the next round or something. And there was like hundreds of PAOK fan posts below it, you know, threatening this and that and whatever. In all the places I've been, like covering football over the years, the two best atmospheres I experienced were PAOK and Legia Warsaw in terms of like sheer fanaticism. So like the scale of what Bo's were doing last night, like this is a proper club. And listen, maybe they've used that to their advantage, that there's not pressure on them. But there still was pressure on them in front of 8,000 people in the Aviva last night, expecting them to perform. But they keep on performing, and it's a great story. But they will, I mean, it's one of the greatest Irish results of all time if they execute it over two legs. Last night was great, but to do it over two legs, I mean, this is another level stuff, definitely.
Yeah. And interestingly, it's worth noting they're the first Irish side to win four consecutive games in Europe. So this is uncharted territory in that respect. So Bowes last night, that's in the Europa Conference League. If they manage to have a good result next week in Greece, they would go into a qualifying round, potentially against Hibernian, one of the teams, but a qualifying round to get into the Europa Conference League. So tomorrow we have Shamrock Rovers in action and we have Dundalk in action. What respective European leagues or tournaments are they vying for or vying in? Because I know this is all changed.
They're all in the conference.
This is all the same. This is all Europa Conference. Okay.
They're all in the Conference League now without going down it. Because Shamrock Rovers lost their first Champions League game, they go straight into the Europa Conference. If they'd won their first Champions League game, they'd go Champions League, Europa League, Europa Conference League. It's a convoluted thing, but basically the key point is, and why Shamrock Rovers have a better chance is, Shamrock Rovers are in with all other champions of leagues who've been knocked out of the other two competitions, whereas Dundalk and Bowes are in with teams who were like runners up in other leagues, but like other strong leagues, you know. So hence Bowes play Pauk. Dundalk tomorrow play Vitesse Arnhem from the Eredivisie, who came fourth in Holland last year. Dundalk are actually the seeded team in that tie, bizarrely enough, because of their results in recent years. But it's really, really hard for our teams who haven't won our league, because they have to face, you know, a higher caliber of opponent, actually, as it happens. Whereas Shamrock Rovers are now waiting on, they play the champions of Albania, and then they play the losers of a tie between the champions of Estonia and Cyprus. And I mean, Dundalk beat an Estonian team last week. I mean, Shamrock Rovers would fancy themselves if it was the Estonian team and maybe the Cypriot team. So Europe has changed, but it's all about being the champions, really. And hence, that's why Bowes and Dundalk's runs are pretty laudable, because the odds are actually very much stacked against them, whereas Rovers will see opportunity as league champions. They would have known there would have been good opportunities there for them.
Okay. And say all things going well, and let's for a second imagine all three get through. The Europa Conference League, is that of a similar format to Champions League and Europa League, i.e. groups of four, and then ultimately they play their legs home and away and make it through to knockout stages? Okay, great.
Yeah. And crucially as well, I mean, the money isn't actually that dissimilar. So there's like $3 million on offer if you get into the group stages, which is exactly what I think was available for the Europa League last year. But basically UEFA are trying to make the Europa League a bit more exclusive. So as a result, they've introduced this new Conference League, which will maybe, like, you know, Dundalk qualified for the Europa League last year, and Shamrock Rovers are basically going through the same type of route to get to the Conference League, if you know what I mean. So they're trying to make the Europa League, they're tightening that up a small bit, but there is still some good teams in the Conference League. I mean, Spurs, I mean, they don't want to be in it. You know, like the English clubs, Spurs are in it. They don't want to be there. But, you know, you will still come across some pretty good sides in it. But where it sits into the TV schedule and so on, like there's it's a trial experiment, this. It's possible in a couple of years' time it might all just go back to the Europa League. But the plan is to try and get champions of smaller countries more football later in the year. And it's as ever, it's a trade-off for making it much harder for them to get into the big competitions. Yeah. But there's a logic in it. There is a logic there for sure.
Okay. You mentioned TV. I saw Keith Long, the Bowes manager, wasn't overly impressed with the lack of TV coverage of his side's ventures in Europe.
Yeah. I mean, it clashes with the Olympics this year, and that is unfortunate. And I think, to be fair, I did ask the question to Keith Long, and I think he acknowledged that. And like, you don't want like a good moment for a league to instantly then become like a rancorous one where people are complaining. But obviously, I mean, it is absurd in a way that a game like that isn't available on TV somewhere. But there are reasons behind it. I mean, there are reasons behind it that those of us who support the game in this country, you know, don't like. Is that, you know, what would the audience have been if they'd lost? You know what I mean? If the buzz wasn't there, generated by the early minutes and so on. I get that, but like I've said for a long time, I think the best showcase for our teams is actually the European games. It's the games where they play against teams from other countries. I think people buy into that and are interested in it, but it's complicated, because if you have a sponsorship deal driven by the FAI, they'll want Eredivisie League games to be shown because they are their sponsor, and the European games sometimes sit outside that, and it's a bit complicated. But I mean, like, certainly, like if the Olympics wasn't taking place, I'm not still sure that game would have been on last night, you know. And Bowes did offer it to RTE, but like, you know, those Olympic athletes don't get coverage for you know, 4 years. I'm not going to make it. You can't end up pitting one thing against the other. Like, the Olympics is totally getting the coverage it deserves, totally justified. But it's just a shame that someone else isn't stepping up to cover some of these games. But people will say, well, not enough people want to watch it. And I guess you just have to do it consistently and perform year on year to make it a demand that people want to see it. And that's obviously, that's the chicken and egg debate we're always talking about with football in this country. But it is a shame. Like, I think people would have really enjoyed it. And that's obviously, there's a sense of regret that these games definitely shouldn't be underground, but there are reasons why they are.
Yeah, no, you've explained them very well and very fairly. I suppose if we now head into each European season and each summer knowing that there's a good chance that the Irish teams will have some wins and make some progress, then there'll be a bit more anticipation. As you said, those European games probably are the best showcase. Not every town in the country has a League of Ireland side in their vicinity, but we can all support the League of Ireland team against European opposition and get on board that way. Yeah. So,
and there's something about, I know you want to put it, but there is something about them being in the Aviva too, and actually,
it's big time. Sometimes there's a bit of glamour, it's attractive.
And to me, like, you know, I think I've always said it for years, that the backdrop of the League of Ireland game sometimes doesn't do justice to the ability of the players. And actually seeing them on a perfect surface with a good stadium, it actually shows people that these are actually like really talented footballers, you know. They actually are. Yeah. For all the sort of jibes and stuff, like, they actually really are. And sometimes if you watch them, you know, in front of a housing estate, you know, behind the goal or a chip fan or something, doesn't necessarily... That influences thinking. And I kind of wonder, have they hit on something with using the Aviva for some of these games more often? There's a cost involved. I get it. The pandemic is a factor and what they've moved the games there. But should you try and make some of these games events on a more regular basis, even cup semi-finals? Just because I honestly don't think they look out of place. I really don't. Mm. I think the results prove that. Mm. But maybe there's food for thought there for the future, for sure.
Yeah. So, Jack Grealish, then, it seems this is very much happening. Harry Kane stole the headlines earlier in the week with his no-show at training. Seems he is going to show up later in the week. But Jack Grealish and Man City, it's happening. £100 million. So this makes Grealish the most expensive transfer in British football. Pogba at £89 million had been top dog. So now it seems Grealish for £100 million. I saw Miguel Delaney's piece earlier today. He was saying that, you know, Kevin De Bruyne was feverishly texting Guardiola after England paid Belgium, saying we've got to sign Grealish. And it seems Guardiola did not need much convincing. Miguel was saying Guardiola's been fixated on him for some time, even breaking a personal rule of never discussing football on the golf course. A great rule, Dan. when he found himself playing with a few figures who'd worked with Grealish, he peppered him those people with questions about Grealish, different positions he could play, etc. So it seems like City were always gunning for Grealish, always wanted him, and now they've got him. And frankly, you can just imagine Grealish in a Man City side, and he's going to be devastating.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating, really, I think. You know, because the thing is, though, like, we still talk about City, though, and the incredible work rate that has demanded of the players. And we saw the concerns that Gareth Southgate had about using Grealish at times in the Euros. So it is going to be sort of like to trace if there's an evolution of Grealish from this point now, because ability-wise, there's absolutely no doubt he's good enough. His own journey is sort of like fascinating. I remember a couple of years back going to watch a championship game, Sheffield United against Aston Villa, and Grealish was in that at that stage in the time we're over here. We were a bit like, well, you know, that Grealish, you know, was he that good really at all as he was down in the championship? And he was just getting kicked around the park the entire match, and he just kept getting up and going again and looking for the ball. I remember just thinking, you know, he is the real deal. Like, he actually is, you know, and you see how he's sort of translated. And like, so he has actually overcome adversity at times. I'd say even that time in the championship when he was being targeted, I know he's the most fouled player, you know, even with Aston Villa. And how he sort of, it's going to be a different existence for him now, where all of a sudden, maybe he doesn't have to like feel he has to drive a team on himself. And all of a sudden you've got De Bruyne around you, and you've got, you know, Bernardo Silva or Mahrez or whoever else is there. And how he sort of sits into that system and how he responds to the demands of Pep. I think that's just going to be really interesting to watch that. And because he has been carrying that Villa team, or playing like a person who knows he has the responsibility to carry Villa in how he plays.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, if he slots into another team or something, maybe he won't always be asked to like do what you have to do at Villa. And that, to me, is the most interesting thing about it.
Absolutely. Like, I think he could become almost a less predictable player. Every time he got possession with Villa on the halfway line and they're under pressure, like, Jack, you know what to do. Draw a foul or try and beat your man and get it up the pitch. Whereas now he can lay balls off. He can be a one-touch player as well as this brilliant dribbler. So suddenly, you know, how he fits in to this amazing team is going to be fascinating. As for the Kane stuff, before you go, I mean, his behaviour suggests, I was saying last night to Miguel when he was on, not showing up for training, somebody of his personality, his behaviour suggests he feels he's been wronged here, I think, by Levy. I suspect Levy told him he could go in some shape or form and now is reneging on that in some shape or form, maybe looking for so much money or just making it more difficult than Kane thought he was going to make it. But I'm just amazed Kane, you know, publicly went for such a move. And it seems even like backtracked a touch himself and is going to show up later in the week. What's your read on this? Do you think he's now more or less likely to go as a result of this week?
I don't know. Like, it's not what I've been following madly closely, but was there some suggestion today about like a trip to the Bahamas, and they're trying to suggest there was like an isolation period, and it's almost like a Marriott Hotel event or something where things are sort of happening retrospectively here. You know,
I think they're trying to round out the edges of this a touch. I think
just,
they're conscious.
Just in case, like, he ends up at Spurs.
Well, you know, there's a legacy there. There's a legacy there.
The fans will believe it and say, you know, it was the media who made all this up, you know. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think certainly, like, if he wasn't the England captain and if he was an overseas player, I kind of wonder what type. Now, listen, he's got a bit of stick, to be fair, anyway, but I don't know. Like, I always say with these things, the move will happen eventually. The move will happen eventually. That's probably still my gut feeling on it, but it is Spurs, you know, and they can dig in and make it as hard as they possibly can.
You're also asking City to now spend about 200 million.
But, I mean,
with Grealish and Kane.
What does money matter to them, you know? The City can have any sponsorship.
They've had a sort of policy, like, they've often said to City, oh, well, we've never broken the transfer record, you know, in the sense that you bought the league. So they've had this policy of just churning out 60 million, you know, players, and they've kind of avoided breaking transfer records. So unless they're wary of doing that twice in one summer.
Yeah, no, listen, I can see the argument, but I mean, again, the people who are on the scene over there, they've never suggested it's one or the other, have they? Like, and I think that the Grealish price hasn't necessarily massively surprised people, maybe 10 or 20 extra on top of it. You know, the little English tax, the English player tax that goes with it.
The Irish tax.
But like that, well, you know, it's that. Now, the England International definitely comes with a premium, you know. But I don't think finance is going to really put City off. It's just this typical brinkmanship. But do you envisage a climb down where he's all of a sudden comes back and says, no, I never wanted to leave here. I'm very happy here. You know, I mean, Steven Gerrard and like, he had his flirtation with Chelsea and stuff back in the day, didn't he? And you try and rewrite history in a favourable way.
Saw the Wayne Rooney and Alex Ferguson best friends photo when he walked back from joining Man City. It can easily be done. You can imagine the picture of Nuno and Harry and maybe even Daniel Levy, and they can, you know, pass
it. I don't know. I mean, he is going. You mentioned he's going to Nuno, who was like, you know, the ninth choice manager or something. It's not as if he's going to be able to go out there and say, I'm really looking forward to the Europa Conference League this season. You know, so I don't know. I think has he gone far enough down the road now that really is hard to sell that turning back, you know, argument that you go to. I wonder, you know, but we shall see.
We shall. Dan McDonald of the Irish Independent. Thanks, Emil.
Thank you, Joe.
It's really about who can sort of minimise the mistakes and make the least amount of mistakes and just sail a really smart series.
For the best Olympics coverage, subscribe to the OTB Highlights podcast feed on the OTB Sports app now.